Well, today's lesson is marriage and honor. So last week we talked about God's kind of purpose for marriage. And the thing about this lesson that's kind of near and dear to my heart is, you know, a lot of times I think we talked about this last week, Scott, that and when you talk about marriage, you're not just talking about just the marriage commands, right? Like there's only three passages you can go to. Really, the whole Bible is a book about marriage. It's about relationships. We're going to talk more about this later on, about the idea of honoring one another, right? All the one another commands apply to a Christian marriage. And so I kind of want to get some of the things, the discussion started by kind of breaking into three kinds of marriages, okay? And they kind of have a little rubric here of the when versus win marriage. We got the win / lose marriage. And we got the lose marriage. Okay? So we got a little rubric here. And we'll kind of talk about each of these. I'll explain more about what each of these mean. But the first one is the win-win marriage. It's a competitive marriage. Okay? So in this marriage, both spouses are in competition with each other for superiority. Husbands and wives can be armed with a vast arsenal of weapons ranging from fists to words of silence. Okay, so they're both trying to win at the expense of the other. Okay, I'm not sure if you guys have known marriages like this. Perhaps your marriage is like this. I don't know. But over what do husbands and wives typically compete? In what ways might husbands and wives compete with each other? And you might have seen this in other marriages, might be true of yourself, but just, you know, what have you guys seen? Where husbands and wives compete. What's that?
Could be time with their own family.
Okay. Yeah, in-law issues.
How to perform chores correctly.
Oh, getting real. Yeah. Standards of cleanliness, you're right. Which one is the right way? Okay.
Just control over, like, who's in charge of different responsibilities, financial, those kind of things.
Yeah. So who controls the pocketbook?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Children.
Yep. Children? Okay, in what way?
Discipline or lack of.
Yeah. Yeah, like who's the favored, you know, who's the parent of the month according to the kids' vote? Right, you can see that. Especially in broken relationships, right? Other ways that there might be competition between the...
I think just authority in general, who's the decision maker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like your person, like how you portray yourself. You can have spouses who are in front of other people trying to tear each other down to make themselves look better.
Mm-hmm. Kind of socialist-y.
Yes.
Yeah, that happens. Other ways that husbands and wives might compete against each other?
Who makes the more money?
He might make more money. He has more financial significance in the marriage.
Mm-hmm. We're laughing because yesterday I was doing my Bible reading plan, which I sometimes have my in a year, and it makes it to longer than a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't.
Mine's always shorter, by the way.
Of course. Well, this goes to my story. So that day, the kids were like, "Little Chloe and Ben, why don't you just read it out loud?" So I started reading out loud, and Carissa's like, "What are you reading?" And I was like, "My Bible, Ezekiel." She goes, "Chapter 40?" And I was like, she was in the other room, "Yes, I just lapped you." Like, because I had told her, I'm like, about a year and a half, a year, you're like, so she'd gone through it, and we're on the same day again.
Nice.
So, yes,
nice.
Good job.
So this is hitting close to home, I see.
Oh, man.
Yep. I think one of it is, you know, who's right.
Right? Who's right more often than the other? Right? Here are all the times I've been right and you've been wrong. And they're thinking, these are all the times I've been right and you've been wrong, right? So there's kind of like the side-by-side comparison of who's the more right person.
The two dogs don't make a lot.
Or who is more long-suffering because of the other person?
Yeah.
Other thoughts on the competitive marriage? What you've seen in it? Okay, so what's the long-term... in this kind of marriage, what are the respective goals of the husband and wife? Right, what is their objective? What do they want? What's kind of their driving?
To be the superior spouse.
Mm-hmm. To be the superior spouse. Mm-hmm. In whatever way that's defined, right? Mm-hmm. So one might be by being more accomplished. And you know, we kind of live in a day and age where suffering is righteousness. And so the one who suffers the most is the most righteous. Has ever seen that? Like, who's the bigger martyr in the marriage? Okay, other thoughts on that? So, what is a long-term prognosis for a competitive marriage? It's a long-term prognosis. Where will this go?
Probably just be a constant battle for your whole marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, constant battle. Okay, until what?
There's no more marriage.
There's no more marriage. Or one just
checks out.
Mm-hmm. I'm tired of fighting.
Or they could get kind of territorial, like this is where I win. This mm-hmm. is where I win, and don't you know they're like they're still battling, like and they have certain categories. Well, I'm better at this, and I'm better at that. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm better at this. And it's all about, they're constantly
yeah.
trying to find other ways. They're adding categories all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
There's no peace, like especially what Scott's saying. So it's like, okay, this is my area, and that's your area. We don't cross boundaries. We don't, you know, I went over here, but you went over there, and we're okay with that.
Yeah, because we all know that my winning is actually more important.
Yeah, there's no unity.
Yeah. Yeah, it sets up permanent rivalry. Right? And so how could you tell what might be some warning signs that you have this kind of marriage? How could you tell?
More arguments than agreements.
Mm-hmm.
You get upset when your spouse does something well or succeeds.
Yeah, I get upset or jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you feel like there's a loser to any particular decision scenario, it's like
mm-hmm.
that kind of is an indicator. Oh, they won and I lost. I
mean, yeah.
If you feel like you're losing or you're winning all the time, it's not really, there's not a oneness there.
Yeah. Other thoughts? Yeah, I think that kind of.
When we find ourselves thinking a lot in terms of I and you,
mm-hmm.
like you already know there's a problem. The competitive marriage takes the one that we're supposed to be and instead keeps making us two.
Yeah.
Right? We're not one. We're
mm-hmm.
me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you find yourself thinking, I mean, I know that that's for me. Whenever I find myself thinking, I am the more aggrieved, the more submissive, whatever,
mm-hmm.
like, that's basically rejecting my marriage.
Uh-huh.
And asserting myself.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I think that's for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just find myself not thinking we, but me.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good insight. I celebrate your insight. Much better than anything I could have done. Yeah. Other thoughts?
A lot of times, like, if you start to reject their idea simply because it's not your own, like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It might be the better idea, but because you didn't come up with it, you're not
going to
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You guys kind of see this? You're going to say something, Noah? Okay. Yeah. So that's the competitive marriage. That's where both people are trying to win. Okay? Now, you have another one called the dominant marriage. This is a win-lose marriage. And there's, in this one, there's clear roles. One person always wins and one person always loses. And the loser always loses and the winner always wins. And it could be that the wife is a winner and the husband is a loser, or the husband is the winner and the wife is the loser. And you can even have spiritual justification for both, right? In one, the husband's always the winner because he's called to be the leader, or you can have the wife, or the husband's always a loser because he's called to be the servant leader, which means you just serve, right? So that's kind of the win-lose marriage. Now, why might a dominant marriage appear to work well?
Because there's a clear, defined leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's clear roles, mm-hmm. Right?
There's no disagreement because the other person doesn't disagree.
Yeah. So there's peace in the marriage? I mean, if this is a situation where the husband is the one who is, you know, always the winner, and the wife is always the loser, what might we think about that marriage?
To the outside, it might look like biblical submission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like biblical submission. You know,
it might not be, but it could look like it.
Yeah. So you can kind of put a holy frame on it, perspective, right?
And you could, there's probably some instances where you might put a holy perspective on, look at that servant husband.
He just serves his wife. He's just always looking
at sacrifice.
Yeah. Right, so it can cut both ways. And I've seen both in the church. So what motivates each party and what does each hope to gain from the arrangement, right? So what would motivate the dominant party? Why would he or she be very happy with this arrangement?
Don't have to fight to win.
Why else might the dominant party just think, this is all right, I like this?
So much winning.
Too much winning. I'm sick of winning. Right?
They're getting what they want.
Yeah. They're getting what they want. There's a perfect overlap between God's will and the wife's will, mm-hmm. or the husband's will. Okay? So we can kind of understand why the dominant party likes this, right? Why would the dominated party like this? Why would they go along with this arrangement?
It's easy. You just, no decisions to be made. You just sort of go with the flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Easy to be passive, right? You don't have to put your neck out on the line. Which is why I think a lot of husbands are fine being passive servant leaders, is they don't have to own any decision.
And there's really no fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, if it goes wrong, well, your idea, not my idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Now, why else might this be attractive to somebody?
You can feel self-righteous, like you're the martyr or the saint.
Yeah.
Enduring everything.
That's right. That is your role in life, is to suffer.
Keeps the peace.
Yeah.
And that's
no,
probably a big
no
one, too.
Conflict.
Mm-hmm. No conflict. For the sake of the children, I'll just grin and bear it and kind of suffer. Or I think, you know, there can be a sense where the dominated party really believes that the dominant party deserves all control because they are worthless and they don't know what they're doing. And they can't make their own decisions because it'd all be terrible anyway. Right, and that's something that often can happen. Other thoughts about why people would want to keep the peace at all costs?
Well, one example would be if one party was caught in some sort of egregious sin and they don't feel the right to step up and say, hey, I don't think we should do this,
mm-hmm.
because that sinful passes held over them.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good insight, Jason. Like if somebody, like I see this a lot of times with men who look at porn, do not feel like they can lead their wives. They're like permanently disqualified. And then the wives in turn, you know, become the accountability partner. Check, you know what I'm saying? So sometimes you have that dynamic too, where the loser party is like, well, I am the loser, so this is what I deserve, this is what I get.
Well, I think anytime that one of the parties in a marriage is kind of an agent of chaos, whether they're a drinker, whether they're just highly manipulative with their anger, anything like that, then the other person truly is keeping the peace in the home.
Yeah.
Like they are the stability in the home, and the way that they keep the peace is by not pushing the buttons of the agent of chaos.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's lots of homes that are structured this way,
mm-hmm.
where I can be the one the children know that they can always safely go to.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that I do that is by not aggrieving the agent of chaos, right?
Mm-hmm.
We try to keep the chaos contained.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to lose for the sake of my children, or
mm-hmm.
for the sake of the way we look to the neighbors, or just for the sake of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that that's not necessarily sinful, maybe not ideal, but definitely like,
yeah,
I'll sacrifice for the sake of those I love.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we can understand this kind of marriage, right?
Well, and I think that's probably most marriages in history.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because for most of history, males have been so dominant.
Yeah.
Economically, socially,
yeah.
physically.
Yeah.
That the vast majority are women's marriage.
Yeah. Yeah, throughout history. I mean, and it's hard to, I mean, in the church, I mean, I have seen the roles play both ways. Probably in our vein, it probably leans more towards male domination than female domination. Although there are ways that, you know, a woman can control the relationship. So how would you know if somebody is in this kind of marriage? What might be some of the telltale signs?
The loser never has anything bad to say about the winner.
Okay, why do you say that?
You're constantly acquiescing, you want to build them up. You don't want anybody to know that they're not doing well or something like that.
Yeah, there's a covering that often takes place, especially if the guy like has a drinking problem or an anger issue or something like that. There's a willingness to throw yourself on the grenade to protect everybody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else? Mm-hmm.
If you're interacting with someone on the decision, and if that person never consults their spouse or always has to consult their spouse for every decision, I think that's a win lose. I mean, if they make decisions without ever consulting, that's kind of, they're the dominant.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't make a single decision without consulting, they may feel like,
yeah, I need to get some groceries. How much money can I spend? Right, that
depends how controlling the.
Yeah, I think that's a good insight. Did you catch that? So if the winner never asks for permission from anything from the spouse, but the loser always has to ask for permission for whatever.
I think it's like a really fine line. Because like in both of those scenarios, like Rebecca said, like it's not a bad thing to talk kindly and to build up your spouse in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
But it can turn into covering things up. Or it's not a bad thing to check with your spouse about finances and things like
mm-hmm.
that. But when you have a win-lose, it can really quickly fall into
mm-hmm.
a controlling thing. So if you're someone looking from the outside, it can be hard to discern
mm-hmm.
Where's that line and where is this something
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
an actual problem that's coming up, or is this just them?
Yeah.
Being, like it can be difficult
yeah.
to see where the line is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other thoughts on when you kind of see this dynamic? I think when it's a situation where it's the male who's being dominated, there's an extreme reticence to give any direct request or commands. They resort to manipulation to try to move the spouse instead of just leveling and just saying, what about this? Does that make sense? So when a man resorts to manipulation to lead his wife and says, well, you know, I need to play chess, not checkers, and, you know, and that's how he's kind of dancing around these things. I'd even say, you know, even if a wife is dominated, right, she'll resort to manipulation to try to get and steer the dominant party her way, right? There's no direct communication. There's a fear of that from the dominated party. Okay, anything else? Right, so that's the win-lose marriage. So now we're gonna go the third way, the lose-lose marriage, okay? Now the goal of this marriage is not personal victory, but the flourishing of the other party, even at cost to oneself. Though not perfect, in this marriage, both parties strive to be the one to give the most dignity, strength, and esteem to each other. All right, so what motivates someone in this lose-lose marriage?
The other person.
Yeah. Specifically, what about the other person?
Their happiness, perfection, moving, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what else motivates the people? I mean, I think that's right on. Other things that you might see in a lose-lose marriage where they're trying to...
I'd say... and this is kind of the focal point, I mean, is that they have had a experience in a relationship that motivates them to mm-hmm. treat that other person with love and respect. And mm-hmm. you know, the overarching story of the Bible is that mm-hmm. you know, we have such, you know, so great a salvation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking like Ephesians. Mm-hmm. Like we've been given this, you know, we have this image bearer, mm-hmm. this example, and then we carry out because of what this example has done for us. We carry that out when we are supposed to be an image bearer for that.
Yeah. So there's a real esteem of the other person. Right. What are some ways that you can tell if you're in that lose-lose relationship? Mm-hmm. Or what have you seen between you? How do they speak of each other in this kind of a relationship? I guess somebody tell if you're in it, or how do you recognize this kind of relationship when you see it? Noah, you got a thought? You keep on doing like this half yawn thing where you're like,
I'm tired.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, well, how do you see it?
What are you asking? I'm sorry.
I guess, how can you tell somebody has this kind of marriage, or people are in this kind of marriage? What are some traits and attributes, actions that you might see, words that you might hear?
Well, that's kind of what Becky's thought about the seeing in the marriage as if the husband and wife kind of refer to, you know, their marriage or talk about a marriage where it's what's important for us, it's always we and us, so I and me and you. And they.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big indicator. Like when you're talking about decisions you made, is it I did this and she thought that and
mm-hmm.
he said
mm-hmm.
this, or is it we talked about it and we really thought and we this and
mm-hmm.
we did this.
Yeah.
Right? There's this mentality that everything you're doing is us.
Yeah.
And we're one, we're united, when you talk to your kids. Well, you know, Mom and I think that, or Daddy
mm-hmm.
and I think that. It's not that. Well, your dad said this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of that overarching attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that another thing is both parties have a great appreciation for the strengths of the other person. And they're more likely to talk about the strengths of the other person instead of the weaknesses of the other person and their shortcomings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's definitely an area where you will be distinct from most other marriages.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that just vowing that you will never make any disparaging comment about your spouse in public and conversation, that's going to be different than most people.
Yeah, my wife does this really well. She's really good at this. She's really good at this.
Right.
Versus, yeah, well, my wife, you know, she doesn't do this.
This is the griping session.
Yeah. And really, what's the long-term prognosis of this kind of marriage?
Joy.
Joy, happiness, right? This one, I think the long-term one is really abuse in some way. And this one is probably divorce. So you kind of look at the lose-lose marriage is when both parties basically decide to die to themselves. And it is expressed in terms of honor, right? It's one thing to like do things, but really the heart, do things for each other and like serve each other. But having this heart disposition of honor, I think is really key to this kind of lose-lose marriage where both parties are, make sure that this marriage is not about themselves, it's about the Lord, and it's about honoring the other person. And so that's kind of the enemy, the mother of all sins is pride, right? Which is to believe that you are the center of all good and glory. And you believe that other people exist for your glory, right? You are here to serve me. You are here to honor me. You're not meeting my needs, right? Where a humble person sees themselves as committed to the glory of God and the good and glory of the other person. And so to have this kind of marriage, both people have to have that common commitment. So we're going to establish that today. And really the chief command here is Romans 12:10. And just so you know, one of the books I think that was really helpful for me in really adjusting my paradigm of marriage was Each for the Other by Brian Chappell. Each for the Other by Brian Chappell. Because honestly, like I think Becky could tell you earlier on in our marriage, I think we were kind of this one, where I was the winner and she was the loser, right? I was the pastor, the older Christian, and I had to be the spiritual leader. And it kind of reached a point where I was becoming so dominant that Becky kind of lost all hope in my saying this. Like, she didn't feel like she can do anything around me without me kind of critiquing her or telling her how to do it, because I was over-leading at this point. And so she kind of brought up this book to me, and it really changed my perspective. You know, that I was looking at marriage through all these leader-follower text and not the mutually honoring text. Does that make sense? So this was a real corrective, for our marriage. And you guys know that I'm what you call a complementarian, where the husbands, are the leaders and the wives are to submit with joy. But all of that is to be done under, I think, the greater context of honoring one another, which is a command for all Christians. And we find it in Romans 12:10. And so to give you some of the context here, Romans is an intensely theological book written to help Jewish and Gentile Christians in Rome to live at peace with one another. Paul starts by rehearsing the work of God in their lives to make them one with him, sending his son to suffer and die so the Jews and Gentiles alike may be redeemed from the bondage of sin. Now in chapter 12, Paul begins to transition from the indicative, what is true of us, to the imperative, what we are to do in response. Now that he has described our great salvation, he gives instructions for how we are to live out our salvation with lives worthy of God. This includes the life self-sacrifice, a life of self-sacrifice and love, including command of 12:10. Somebody want to read that for me? 12:10.
Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor.
Okay. So focus on the word honor. What is honor? What does it mean to show honor? What is honor? For instance, when you appear before a court of law, you refer to the judge as your honor, okay? And there's certain things that people do in the courtroom, right, to show honor, like what?
Respect.
Respect. You stand when he shows up. You sit down when he tells you to sit. He's always in this elevated position, right? He wears a robe nobody else does, right? So he's like singled out for respect, right? So in a court of law, that's what we do, right? And why do we do that in a court of law? Why is that there that tradition?
Because it shows honor to the authority.
To the authority, right?
It shows that we're under that authority.
And we're under that authority.
And it stands for law.
Yeah.
So it's an honor for the law itself.
Honor for the law itself, right? Okay, so would we look at, so kind of based off of that, what is honor? Right? When we say I want to honor somebody.
Showing high respect and regard for authority.
Yeah, showing high respect and regard. And maybe not necessarily for authority, but just for
leadership.
The person.
Yeah.
Well,
leadership.
I think too,
in
like
that case, yeah.
In the courtroom case, it doesn't matter in many senses the personality or character of the judge, it's his position as the judge. And so I think about, you know, the way that we honor people is often because of the position that God has placed them in as either our spouse or our pastor or our governing authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of their failings,
yeah,
they still are worthy of and deserving of honor.
Yeah. Okay, so somebody who's honorable, you know, somebody who's worthy, right? And when you look at if somebody is, if to show honor or worth, it's kind of like they have a, you treat them as you're better. Right? In a court of law, the judge can do what he wants, you can't. Right? There's kind of this intentional elevation of other people, often at your own expense. Okay? So to honor is to show respect and reverence. It is to esteem the priorities and position of the object of honor. To show honor is to display deference and respect. So what does it look like to outdo one another in showing honor? And how does this command contrast contrast with the usual way people relate to each other? So what does it look like to outdo one another in honor? So you look at this. This is in a church setting. You know, the Romans all hear this. And they're going to start outdoing one another in honor. How would that look like on the ground? I guess, what would that look like on the ground?
Instead of competing against one another, you're competing for each other.
Okay. Yeah, how would that show itself in this fictional church where everybody's outdoing one another with honor? What would the conversations be like? What would the activities be like?
Contrast is, you know, you would see a building out versus a critical spirit of people, you know, second guessing or whatever, and then everyone on contrast would be building up and looking to edify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like one, not that I recommend the show, but have you ever seen Survivor? And they do the private camera interviews. What are those conversations usually like? You pick any reality show. How do they talk about the contestants?
Not well.
Mm-hmm. Not with honor.
Not with honor.
Not with honor.
Right, you never just hear somebody say, I'm just so honored to be on the show. I don't know why they picked me. When you look at this guy, he's really good at this, and this woman's just so beautiful. I mean, that just never happens, right? And I think one of the reasons why reality TV is so enticing for us is it kind of reveals human nature for what it is, so that we can feel better about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It kind of feeds self-righteousness to a certain extent. But yeah, it kind of, you know, just the competitive, the desire to tear down other people. Yeah, and I think, why are people drawn to the kind of, you know, the conversations that dishonor people? Why do people like that? Why do the people find that more interesting than the person who is always celebrating other people?
person looks bad, then maybe I don't look as bad to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's kind of a desire to hear bad news about other people and hear about what other people are doing wrong. So in a church where people are showing honor to each other, I mean, what might be some phrases you might hear people say?
Thank you.
Thank you, right? Very common. You didn't have to do that. I really appreciate it. There's some other things you might hear.
There'd be no hidden service because everyone's service would be pointed out by someone else.
Yeah. You like that line? You should have seen what, you know, Nathaniel Mullins did. He actually comes in here in the heat of summer. And you know what I'm saying? Like there's, wow, I mean, what a servant. What would be some other things you might hear?
I think complimenting people on, like, on the service that they do, whatever, mm-hmm. wherever they find themselves, is like, I'm so glad that you do this. You're so good at this. I don't think I could do, you know, X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
You know, lots of. I mean, because I've heard that said about other people. I've heard it said about me on occasion.
Yeah.
I've said it to other people, where I was like, yeah, I probably wouldn't be able to handle doing.
Yeah.
All of this, so. I think a lot of like showing people that you're thankful for their abilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think some other things you might see is no job is beneath anybody. There's always an honor to do it. You want me to wipe bottoms in the nursery? Man, you trust me with those babies? Okay, I'll do it. I think it'd be continual. You got to hear that guy's testimony. Man, what a story. You know, that's just great. Yeah, so they're just, I mean, there's people that we know who just always talk up other people.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, when you, in an honoring environment, when you have incomplete information or don't understand a certain situation, you always approach it with
mm-hmm.
believing the best, trusting mm-hmm. humility, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. a suspicious, critical,
mm-hmm.
I bet that person is, you know, they were just doing this, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're just, you know. How can I, what's going on? Is
mm-hmm.
there anything I can support you, you know?
Yeah. What if, so in this honoring community, does that mean that there's no disagreement? I mean, how are disagreements handled in this honoring community?
A lot of question asking, I think, versus
okay.
accusing.
Yeah, how were the questions asked?
Starting with the smallest circles possible.
Yeah. So you want to protect the dignity of others.
You ask open-ended questions instead of leading questions.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem with leading questions?
You have an end in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of feels like you're manipulating the person you're asking questions to. Does that make sense?
I think... like in a church that's as like-minded as ours, when there is a disagreement, that disagreement looks big to us. But
mm-hmm.
if we're honoring one another, we're remembering the reason I'm honoring you ultimately is you're made in the image of God and you're redeemed by him.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit is in you
mm-hmm.
and has led you in all truth and has given you a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want to make sure that foremost in my mind is affirming all of those things. And
mm-hmm.
as I'm asking the question, all that history
yeah.
is informing the question that I'm assuming you actually do have a good answer for this.
Yeah.
And that maybe if you and I get to our answers a little differently, we can talk through that. But I'm assuming that the Holy Spirit is in you.
Yeah.
You have a conscience. It's functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're in sin, I'm concerned. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think instead of like, oh, we disagree on vaccines, you're in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I think there's a tone and a way you can ask questions that aren't accusatory. Why did you spend so much money on that playground out there? Right? There's a lot about that tone that makes it very clear that you disapprove of the decision. And so why are you even asking the question? versus, you know, kind of help me understand why you put, you know, the emphasis on the playground equipment, right? Why, how much money did we spend? And I mean, I'm just kind of, I'm struggling. I am the one struggling with the amount of money spent. And I realize it's me. I want to kind of respect the decision. I just need some more help understanding it. Does that make sense? So you're making it clear that it's not your problem. This is my problem, and I want you to help me with my problem.
I think if you like even spend a little bit of time thinking of possible answers to that, mm-hmm. maybe someone gave a specific donation and asked to build a playground.
Yeah.
Like, that's just assuming that they have a good answer.
Yeah.
And then you're just looking for what the answer is. And
yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, it comes from like an attitude of trying to seek to understand instead of trying to seek to prove that they did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm trying to understand why you made that choice. Instead of, I'm trying to prove that you made a bad choice,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's a heart where you say, I want to honor you. And sometimes it might be something, a decision that's made that causes you to struggle with that, right? The elders made just a bad decision. And you want to honor them. And if you're just being honest with yourself, you're just struggling with it. But your end goal is to get clarification because you want this type of relationship and you want to do that with them, and this is kind of interfering. That's very different from trying to exalt yourself over the leaders and to prove that you're more righteous than them. Does that make sense? That competitive streak. So like in a marriage, right? I mean, how does this command to work itself out show itself in marriage between husbands and wives? If you're to honor one another, what would be some telltale signs that this person, this wife, or this husband, they really get this command to honor? What would you see and detect?
If you sense there is, you don't quite understand what your spouse thinks or believes about a certain topic or decision
yeah.
that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
It's very honoring to approach them, you know, in a good setting, the two of you, and just have a good conversation about it, just trying to understand, and then looking to maybe share why you
mm-hmm.
don't quite see, and maybe even persuade them if you think that there's something that they're missing, to help them in that sense. It's really honoring.
Yeah.
The way, I think that you can have the same objection to maybe a decision your spouse is making and really honor them or dishonor them in the way in which you
yeah.
approach it.
Yeah. I think there's sometimes subtle things, like if your spouse is not making sense, you can either say, what are you talking about? You're not making sense. Right, that's one way of saying it. Or the other one could just be, I don't understand what you're saying. Right? One says, you're the problem. The other one assumes that they're making sense, I'm just not understanding it. Does that make sense? So it's a dispositional change that I'm the dumb one in the relationship here. Right? Or maybe not I'm the dumb one. But you know what I'm saying? Like that's there's different ways you could say the same thing. And so I think with honoring, you know, there's intentional vocabulary. Like if you have a question about why did you spend money on this versus I saw that you spent money on this. I'm not quite sure if I understand why. Right? So help me to honor you. Right? That's my end goal. Instead of like accusations or whatever. Right? So I think that's a very common way of doing it. How would somebody who's honoring their spouse speak of their spouse to others?
I'm not going to let it turn into a session where everyone's bringing up the faults of their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're going to steer it away from that, or you're going to put the spotlight on the good and not the bad.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, what else would you see?
I
parents never really argued or brought up arguments that they were having in front of us, I guess. So if they had a disagreement, mm-hmm. mom wouldn't come to the kids and say, like, mm-hmm. Well, your dad mm-hmm. says this, but I want this, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, if you are arguing about something, it kind of stays between. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
I think even talking to your kids about, you know, I hope you grow up to be like your dad in this way. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I say to my sons a lot, is I really hope that you have your dad's work ethic. I really hope that you are a man of integrity like your father.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I think just in addition to, like, I'm not going to demean him mm-hmm. or, you know, show my frustration to my children. But, yeah, like,
yeah.
I want you guys to grow up to be like your dad.
Yeah. I mean, how do you field complaints about your spouse from your children? Yeah, that's kind of the way your mom is. Right? I mean, that's a way that parents can slip into that. Like, we all know I'm your favorite parent, but, you know, we all tolerate your mom. Or we all tolerate your dad. Right? So that'd be a way of...
I think you should be the less tolerant than your spouse about criticism towards them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
If the kids say anything critical of Carissa, I should be much less tolerant of that.
Yeah.
She is.
Well, you probably.
She had the freedom if she wants to overlook something, but.
Yeah. Well, you probably deserved it. Well, it was at the time. You're guilty a bunch of other times, too. You deserved it. You didn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a. You're not going to demean mm-hmm. her to me. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, why do many husbands and wives kind of struggle with this command to honor one another? Go ahead, Cody.
Huh?
You made it facial. You're going to say something.
My face, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just because we're naturally predispositioned to sin and exalting ourselves. And so
yeah.
It can be hard to lower yourself and raise up somebody else.
Yeah. And I think there's this belief, this lie, that if I exalt somebody, I'm diminished in some way. Right, if I exalt other people, I am diminished in some way. Like a zero-sum game mm-hmm. when it comes to honor. But honestly, if somebody is always speaking well of their spouse, do you think more or less of them?
More.
Yeah, why is that? Why do you think more of the person who's always speaking well of their spouse?
Because we all recognize that that's not an easy task.
Uh huh.
I mean, we live with our spouses, so you see them in all of their glory, or you know,
yeah.
And so you know their deepest faults, and so it can be easy
mm-hmm.
to want to harp on those. And so when you see another person exalting mm-hmm. their spouse, you can recognize that that is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
We can respect them for that.
So what do you think about the person who's always complaining about their spouse?
They have no self-control over their wants.
Yeah. Mental note, do not be open and honest with this person.
Well, I think too, like, just even from a worldly sense, like, you're the one who picked him.
Yeah.
I was deceived. Yeah. And again, there's this martyrdom trap that we often get into, right? I'm so long-suffering. You should see how much I have suffered. I'm married to this person. You know, versus somebody who has a pretty ungodly spouse, but you see a woman just talk about her husband really well. I mean, it says a lot about her character that she was able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the traps that this world gets into is if you're not getting the honor, there's something wrong with you. And honor is a zero-sum game. And I think in the next passage that we're going to talk about is, you know, just the example of Jesus Christ, right? Where he humbled himself to the lowest position. I mean, he was humiliated. He wasn't just humble, he was humiliated, right? So that he can honor other people and kind of lift them up. So we're gonna go ahead and just kind of stop right there. It'll be a few weeks before we kind of get back to it. But and just as you kind of walk away, just think through, you know, what can I do to honor my spouse this week? How can I talk to them? How do I talk about them? How do I show a disposition towards them? And just kind of honor one another, and Thanksgiving week will give you plenty of opportunities to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Serve each other, serve their families, all those things. But yeah, it's, and you don't lose. You don't lose when you're a lose-lose marriage, right? When you're both are losing, I mean, Christ is exalted and there is joy. So let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll move on to our next aspect of worship this morning. Well, Father, we are just so grateful for your word and your wisdom. And Lord, this world tells us that we should be greedy and lust for all honor for ourselves, but that's not the way of your son, and that's certainly not what he has done. He allowed himself to be a loser so that we might win. He died on the cross in a humiliating fashion so that we might be, well, unduly celebrated in heaven, not because of anything we have done, but because of what your son has done. And I just pray for a spirit of humility with all these brothers and sisters, that we will be quick to honor one another and speak well of each other, and especially in the context of marriage. And just help our eyes to be attuned to see all the wonderful ways you have created our spouses, all the gifts and abilities you've given them, to see how the Holy Spirit has just worked in them to bring about many wonderful transformations and change. And help us to focus on those things, Lord, and to celebrate it to them and to others and to you. In Christ's name, amen.